Every few years, Utah Foundation surveys Utahns about their quality of life. Their responses allow us to look back and see how perceptions have changed over time. And we also recently published a research report on suicide, looking at how Utah compares to other states in the Mountain West and the nation. In this edition of Utah Thrives, we'll look closely at one aspect of quality of life, our personal and community relationships. In addition to making us feel better about our lives, strong relationships can also protect our physical and mental health. This is Utah Thrives, the Utah Foundation podcast. I'm Dan Bomas. The Utah Foundation Quality of Life Survey was first conducted in 2013. The index, based on the answers to a set of survey questions, has actually declined since that time, standing today at 70 on a scale of 100. Peter Reichardt is president of the Utah Foundation.
Within Utah, the thing that really stood out for us was that, over time, even as the economy has been improving in recent years, that the overall index, which is a combination of about 20 different factors that we look at and to try to determine how people feel about their community quality of life, that overall index has actually declined. So you would think as the economy improves, people are automatically happier, but that's not necessarily the case. And part of it is probably due to growing pains. We're growing quickly. We're thriving economically, and along with that can come some diminishing returns on the quality of life front.
Prosperity for individuals and communities clearly does matter, but Peter Reichardt says there were some unexpected findings as well.
There were certain things that stood out. One thing is obvious, I think. You know, we did find that we looked at both community quality of life and personal quality of life, and we found that people with higher incomes tended to view both those more favorably. That's not a surprise, right? But with regard to community quality of life, we also found that people who are religiously affiliated tended to have a much higher or much better perspective on their community quality of life than people who are not religiously affiliated. So that was interesting and maybe for some surprising.
The report, Getting to Tomorrow, Addressing Suicide in Utah and the Mountain States, found that Utah's suicide rates have been increasing among all age groups. Utah's rate is fifth highest in the nation. Several other states in the Mountain West have high suicide rates as well. There appears to be a correlation between living at high elevations and suicide. But Peter Reichardt says not everything is so easily explained.
For instance, rurality and gun ownership are generally associated with higher suicide rates when you look at the picture nationally. But within the Mountain States, things stand out. Utah and Nevada have two of the least rural populations in the country, and yet they have high suicide rates. Another one is opioid prescription levels. When you look at it at the Mountain States level, we don't have particularly high opioid prescription levels. With that said, we also looked at the county level within Utah. And what we did find was that we found that there were five counties that were contiguous counties that have the highest suicide rates in the state. Then we looked at the previous 10 years at opioid prescription levels, and four of those counties were in the top five for opioid prescription levels.
Among many other factors, the loss of close personal relationships can increase the risk of suicide. Utah Foundation's report points out that divorced men, for example, have twice the suicide rate of married men. A relationship loss or betrayal can also lead to feelings of hopelessness. Respondents to the Utah Foundation Quality of Life Survey rated positive and supportive relationships with others higher than any other factor in their personal quality of life. Dr. Julianne Holt-Lunstad is a professor of psychology at Brigham Young University. Her work, studying hundreds of published studies on the effects of social isolation on health, has shown that strong relationships protect us against a whole range of health problems.
So the first meta-analysis that I did looked at, you know, all of this data worldwide. It included 148 different studies with over 300,000 participants. And what we found was that people who were more socially connected had a 50% reduced risk for premature mortality. And because most people don't really imagine what that means in terms of their longevity, we benchmarked this relative to the risk of other well-known risk factors that we all take very seriously for our health, including things like smoking, alcohol consumption, physical activity, obesity, nutrition, air pollution. And what we found was that this was comparable to these, and in many cases exceeded that. For instance, lacking social connections carries a similar risk to smoking up to 15 cigarettes per day. It exceeded the risk of obesity, exceeds the risk of physical inactivity, and air pollution. So what we found was that this has a very robust effect on our overall health and risk for premature mortality.
Professor Holt Lundstad says additional studies have found the negative effects of social isolation were common to all age groups.
They have found that individuals, that younger adults, so 18 to 24-year-olds, actually have the highest prevalence rates. And so we do know that the effect of being isolated and lonely can be experienced across any age. And if someone is isolated or lonely, that it significantly predicts risk for mortality. But yet the prevalence rates vary to some degree. And so it's really important, because I think a lot of people just assume that this is applies only to older adults. And we now have some evidence to suggest that this may be highly prevalent in adolescents and young adults as well.
Holt Lundstad also concedes that not all relationships are healthy. Bullying and abuse are relationships, after all. And there's a classic example of peer pressure getting us to engage in risky behaviors.
While our relationships can encourage healthy eating, they can also encourage smoking. And, you know, so we know if family members or peers are smoking, you're more likely to do that as well. So there can be these negative kinds of influences. We also know that while our relationships can help us cope with stress, our relationships can be sources of stress as well. And so one of the things that I'm always very conscious of it and try to be clear about is that we can't just focus on the presence or absence of others in our lives, that we have to take into account the quality of those relationships.
Interventions meant to address the effects of social isolation often come too late to be helpful, Professor Holt Lundstad says. And while she believes they're important and the needs of elderly people and others at high risk need to be addressed, she's hoping that our social health, our need for relationships and skills to keep them healthy, will one day be seen as an essential part of health promotion and primary care for both children and adults.
We now have very good evidence that our social connections can have a profound effect on our health and longevity, equivalent to these other kinds of lifestyle factors that we take very seriously for our health. And what I would argue is that our social relationships and our social connection can be viewed as part of one of these lifestyle factors, right? And that just as we take seriously being physically active, we should take seriously for our health being socially active, and that we should be conscious of this in terms of taking it seriously for our health. And that this could take, you know, of course, a wide spectrum all the way from a very personal level of just focusing on our everyday decisions in our life that may have effects on our health, like sleep, like diet, like exercise, that be included in that list, but that it also be included in, say, health education that's received in K-12 education, that this is part of a healthy lifestyle that's taught, that clinicians, it's part of medical training that they educate their patients and talk about in follow-ups, you know, not only what's your blood pressure and, you know, do you smoke, but, you know, how are your connections, that these kinds of conversations can be had in the medical setting as well. And that it is part of that conversation about healthy lifestyles.
As we're discovering the crucial role strong relationships play in our overall health, there's an optimistic sign in the Utah Foundation Quality of Life Survey. Respondents put people support in a quadrant indicating both higher relative importance and relative performance compared to many other factors in the overall index. Our thanks to Brigham Young University psychology professor Julianne Holt-Lunstad for participating in this Utah Thrives podcast. Getting to Tomorrow, Addressing Suicide in Utah and the Mountain West, was made possible with grant support from the Sorensen Legacy Foundation and the McCarthy Family Foundation. That report and the Quality of Life Survey are available on the Utah Foundation website, utahfoundation.org. Utah Foundation is a nonpartisan public policy research group funded by business, philanthropic foundations, higher education, local government, and individual donations. Founded in 1945, our mission is to produce objective, thorough, and well-reasoned research and analysis that promotes the effective use of public resources, a thriving economy, a well-prepared workforce, and a high quality of life for Utahns. Utah Foundation seeks to help decision makers and citizens understand and address complex issues. Utah Foundation also offers constructive guidance to improve governmental policies, programs, and structures. I'm Dan Bomas. Thanks for listening.